Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right co-host Dan McKay.
Hello, everybody.
And on the political left, co-host Shireen Gorbani.
Hey, nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you, Shireen. I was listening to a national news program and they talked about the three I's: impeachment, Iran, and Iowa. Let's do them real quickly. And let's start with Iowa. Bernie Sanders is in the lead. I don't know if either of you watched the debates, but any predictions on Iowa?
No.
How many days out are we?
Oh, golly.
It's coming up February 3rd, so we are coming right up on it.
Okay. Dan, you have predictions? Shireen, you have predictions?
I am going to call it right now for Tulsi Gabbard.
Okay.
I'm going to call it right now. Iowa and the Democrats in Iowa are going to come to their senses and realize they need a woman. And they need somebody who can step up and do a good job. And if they're going to do that and be sane, she's their gal.
Oh, interesting. Okay, disagree. Strong disagree on that prediction. I think, you know, Iowa is all about the ground game. So it's the word on the street, of course, is that the Bernie organizers have been dedicated. They stayed dedicated, stayed very organized this whole time. Warren has a huge field program there, and they are working through blizzards. They're working through all sorts of weather challenges that Iowa likes to bring. And Buttigieg and Biden are certainly bringing the money to the table to be able to have a presence there.
Yeah.
So it is, the last Iowa poll came out. The person who's been at the top of that poll has gone on to win, and it was Bernie this time.
Yeah.
So we are just a few weeks out, and there we are. So it'll be interesting to see, but also the candidates are bunched up. So we've got four, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, and Biden all really close together at the top of that poll. And Iowans don't like to be told what to do, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
like including vote for someone sane who can lead the party in the country.
But you know, I think
that can beat Donald Trump.
I think
that can beat Donald Trump.
New year, it might do us all well to stop calling people insane for choosing a different party and really just understand that there are
Bernie Sanders is not insane because he's a Democrat.
Okay.
Bernie Sanders is insane for whole other reasons, but I will work on that New Year's resolution.
Let's work on that.
Come on.
Hey, from the political middle, I don't have a lot to add except to say that I'm starting to see the pairings come together for the, you know, president, vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know exactly how that'd be, but Buttigieg, Booker, you know, they're going to, Klobuchar, they're going to be paired up.
Castro.
Yes.
Since we last talked about this, we've had more people leave the race. So Booker's suspended his campaign as well. And it's interesting to see. Julian Castro came out and endorsed Warren. We've got a lot of, I think, interesting pieces of that coming together as well. And these next weeks are going to be a really interesting time to be in Iowa. I've always wanted to be in Iowa for the Iowa caucus. So
I've always thought Iowa's different. Iowa's interesting, right? Because you've got 700, I think if I remember right, it's like 700,000 Democrats and 700,000 Republicans.
Perfect place to start the presidential.
Split right down the middle. So it's interesting.
There's a lot of debate about that, though, because Iowa is really, really white, and it's not reflective of the country as a whole. And that's something that Booker and Castro both have been talking about as they've exited the race, feeling like those early states that determine, so including New Hampshire, don't really reflect the diversity that we have in this country.
Yeah, great point, Shireen. Great point. The second I is impeachment, and the House has voted to send the impeachment articles to the Senate. Mm. We've got Nancy Pelosi now naming the, do you call them the prosecutors?
No, they're the management team.
The management team, right?
Management team.
We're going to have an interesting couple of weeks in this country.
Okay.
Sounds like there may be witnesses called, which I think is a new movement, right? So it sounds like there's not the full support in the Senate to just dismiss.
Yeah.
So what will happen?
Yeah. Mm. Well,
a circus and a freak show that will not help.
Senator Romney mentioned he wanted someone to come as a witness.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember who that was?
No, wasn't
Bolton.
Josh Bolton. Well, I think that's going to happen, my prediction. And I would also say that Bolton's got a book coming out, and he won't miss the chance to make this part of the drama of his book. Is that sinister?
Smart, right? Maybe you worked with Mitt to get him in, called in.
Shireen, I want to go to you on this one. The other I is Iran, and Ben McAdams cast an interesting vote. Love you to give the background to our listeners.
Yeah, so, a couple of really interesting things are happening. I think we spoke briefly last week about Lee coming out, really expressing some concern about the briefing that he had heard, talking frequently and has for many years about feeling that there's a real constitutional duty for Congress to approve when we go to war.
Yeah. Can you pause there real quickly to just say, Dan, do you think he calls the president before and says, hey, I'm going to do this. Don't get too alarmed. I still want to be on the Supreme Court, but I just am a Constitution guy. I got to do this.
Oh, I don't know. Something tells me that there's probably, more communication,
Interesting. Sorry to interrupt.
Sometimes when I'm critical of folks, I will let them know. I've called Ben McAdams actually after the show and said, hey, I just want you to know I was a little bit tough on you.
And Dan wasn't
maybe
here.
You're a nice guy.
Last week. And so didn't have a chance to comment on it. But keep going, Shereen. Wondered if you thought.
So that had happened. And to be clear, before Lee made his critical comments, he did say, I'm a supporter of the president. I continue to be a supporter of the president. I'm very concerned about what we just heard and the actions that have been taken in Iran. In Iraq, technically. But the point of the story is that after that, the House brought forward a Democratic War Powers Resolution that really was calling in, that would limit the president's power to unilaterally take action, military action in Iran. So this is a statement. This is where we stand, and we believe that it is making the case and putting that out there and casting a vote on it. It is it's non-binding. There's not a direct action that comes from it. And something that we also have to consider is that it could very, if let's say it were something with more teeth, it's going to get sent over to a Senate where we have Mitch McConnell, who will do absolutely nothing with it. So it's the vote that was taken, and I think that we are gearing up for a much more in-depth conversation about war powers and this president. So I think we should all be looking for that in the coming weeks.
So in the next couple of weeks, buckle up. Lots of news is going to be happening, and there'll be a little bit for everybody.
Well, and the irony of the whole thing is, regardless of whether the strike was necessary, we can not get into the substance of that. It's interesting, though, that you see the House taking this position on, on unilateral action for security or whatever reasons. But, when Osama bin Laden was attacked in Pakistan, a country we weren't familiar or that we weren't at war with, one. Two, that was an ally in the Mideast. You start to see some of the categories that lined up there. And the president didn't consult with anybody, right? He saw an opportunity. And honestly, as I look back on it, made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I can't imagine binding a president's hands one way or the other. So LeVar Webb said it best today. I thought this was the most awesome thought as I thought about it, as I read this. LeVar Webb said, you go to Congress, you can do two things. One, nothing. Two, express outrage. And at the end of the day, it seems like Congress has found, at least the House, the Democratic controlled, has found number two very well.
Pretty good.
So I'm going to, again, disagree with you there, because there have been efforts to work on measures around gun control, equality, efforts around protecting our environment, really concrete things that have moved forward, and they go to a Senate to die. So that's still yours.
And no. If we go back to the last 6 years of the Obama administration and look at the number of things the president did not sign, it's really quite egregious. I'm not saying it's one party over the other or that one is more guilty. They're all bad.
They all love
to do nothing and express outrage.
I think it's a lot of really sincere people who are trying to make change in a system that's fundamentally broken.
Now, that's, I can agree with you there.
We talk a lot of national issues in a first segment, and we're going to, in the second segment, talk about the Utah governor's race and some other things, but it's a little bit national news that Abby Huntsman agreed to leave The View to come work on her father's campaign. This is my segue to local news.
Well, The View has an I in it. We were kind of going down the aisle.
There we go. Shereen, how did that news play for you, and do you think it helps our former governor to have his daughter here working on his campaign?
I have very little opinion on this.
Okay, that is a fair position, because you know what? I have a little bit of an opinion.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well, just from the political middle.
Yeah, I'd like to hear this.
Well, I just don't think that star power and the Huntsman name are going to play really well in Utah politics right now. I'm just a hunch. Huh. In other words, it's hard to play sort of the common man theme when you have this national, journalist star power that's, as smart and beautiful as Abby Huntsman is doing her thing.
Interesting.
Dan, your thoughts. And all I'm saying is that I'm not sure if it is a big plus for the campaign.
Okay. I'll say that. I think Utah just loves fame and they love famous people. Okay. And at the end of the day, they love their brand recognition and names and that kind of stuff. And I think at the end of the day,
you don't think we're more egalitarian, common man, hard.
I think we like. I think we like to act like we are, but we are not.
Interesting.
No, as a former North Dakotan.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going
to
say.
I want to understand this better because, see, I'm thinking that what I'm seeing from Spencer Cox is creating some momentum for him, and the fact that he's using volunteers, and the fact that he used the rural thing, and. You know, he just has an ability to speak a language that Utahns intuitively relate to.
Yeah. When you contrast the two, I can clearly see that. That said, you know, there was a guy from Alpine running against a very famous Mormon in a U.S. Senate race not long ago.
Uh-huh.
And I will just tell you, you know, and the guy had a last name like Kennedy. I mean, you're Kennedy and you're versus Romney. That sounds awesome. Really, it's Utah every
day. But he did amazingly well.
Well,
to
Romney,
my point.
Yeah, Romney got almost 75%. I mean,
I thought Kennedy
was amazing.
Held himself up quite well.
I agree.
Okay.
You know, Utah, we love well-known names and we love celebrity status.
Wow.
And so it's probably a good move-ish thing because there's a lot of people who'd love to meet her.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more about the Utah governor's race in the next segment. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are talking about the Utah governor's race. Some news happened this week. We had Thomas Wright get a major endorsement from a sitting congressman that many thought was, might enter the race. This looked to me like vintage, planned out Thomas Wright thinking, meaning that he's got a plan to become governor and he's executing on a plan.
Oh.
Comments.
That's very interesting, right? It does fit Thomas's MO. I mean, Thomas is a very thoughtful guy. Interesting. I hadn't thought of that nature of it. Yeah. I thought it was extra surprising to see a sitting member of Congress with another year of term still in him, right, out endorsing a candidate that isn't the, you know, existing administration.
Yeah, and before the primary, who cares if they endorse after? And with six very worthy candidates, and so this is very much by design in my mind, Shireen.
I always think, I think endorsements matter not at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm always really interested in that process. Am I going to vote for somebody based on somebody telling? Absolutely not. But I do think what's interesting is when it comes with resources, when it comes with a mobilized base, when it comes with money. I don't see necessarily that that's what Bishop brings. Yeah. So it's curious. I'm interested in the process of endorsements.
Well, so the thought that I would have is that Thomas Wright does not have a lot of name ID.
Yeah.
And look at the people in this race that do. And mm-hmm. for, 24 hours, he owned the news cycle on this point. And I bet there's a whole bunch more coming.
Mm. Yeah.
So that would be my thought. And then I thought Bishop was really interesting because he said in multiple interviews I heard him quoted on that he is willing to consider being lieutenant governor.
Huh, yeah.
Did you read that? Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. And so that's an interesting. So he brings name ID, a base, rural, public land expertise. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting. And Rob Bishop is the former Speaker of the Utah House of Representatives before he was in Congress. And it's interesting to see a former Speaker not endorsing a former Speaker also. See, I'm as interested. So whenever there's an endorsement and there's a crowded field, I'm always interested in the thought process of someone like that for not choosing the others.
Sure.
Right? Like, what is
it? Well,
and
he explained it.
Yeah.
Did you hear his explanation?
I did not, no.
He basically said, I wrote down all the things that the next governor needs to do and be.
Okay, that's the public talking points.
Okay.
Get past that.
Well, then I looked at the other ones and I looked at who could
when
do it.
When you're choosing one, you're not choosing others. And there is a reason pre-primary to make those kinds of decisions and those kinds of statements.
Maybe he wants to be LG.
And maybe it's he wants to be LG and he sees that Thomas is the good path. Or maybe he really just legitimately doesn't like the other five. I don't know.
Yeah. I had an interesting experience. I was at a St. George Economic Summit last week and moderated the 6 Republican candidates for governor.
I watched it.
In a forum, okay. Well, it was interesting because they asked me to do that in November. I said, sure, I'm happy to do it.
You should have covered the rules before, by the way. Anyway.
Okay. Well, so no. So then I kept thinking, oh, 3 of them will show up or 4 of them. I mean, you know.
All there.
Hughes announced, you know, hours before, it seemed like. But I was impressed by the quality of these candidates.
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with a few other people, including a former governor, who basically said, you know, all of these candidates can do a great job for the state.
Yeah.
Shereen, I know it's a different party.
Yeah, I was going to say.
If you were a Republican, remove your brain for just a minute.
Or just think about
Shereen.
The reality that if, you know, a high likelihood that we'll get a Republican candidate,
yes.
Is this slate a good slate of candidates for someone like you?
There are candidates that I would very happily live with that have priorities that matter to me, that seem to operate under a framework of ethics that matters to me. And then there are some that I'm deeply uncomfortable with.
Okay. That's a fair, and you don't have to use names. Dan, just to with you, I'm just going to ask you quickly. So Hughes gets into the race. You start to see his ads. I think he's going with a punchline of get it done.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Get it done. Yeah.
Get
something
it done.
Like that. Yeah.
You give us some commentary on this new candidate into the race. I mean, he's known as the speaker.
It's like a Larry the Cable Guy, or no, like Larry.
Yeah,
something. It's like to me when I first
get
heard
her done,
that,
Larry, get her done. Larry the Cable Guy.
Larry the Cable.
Is that
guy.
Right?
I think that's right.
Yeah,
I thought that's what I was like. I was like, what, get her done. Like,
yeah.
But if I start to think about the strengths of the candidates, right? And I've told Hughes this before. And I've told others, like, you lean into your strengths, right? And Hughes, I think Spencer Cox did a great job of this with his announcing in that ad. Mm-hmm. So he leaned into his strengths. He said, I'm a family guy. I'm rural Utah. Mm-hmm. And I'm you.
And service is important to me.
Yeah, and he went through those things, right?
He lived by doing.
That was his deal. And Hughes, you know, he's a blue-collar background, hardworking guy, you know, kind of bootstrapped himself into doing something. He leaned into it. He made his announcement at an auto shop. Right here in on State Street at like, I don't know, the 2700
yeah.
South at D's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he got that done. And you start to think about, okay, so those are the two candidates. Huntsman is, you know, it was different, but it was an inspiring video as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was, honestly, there were a few that I watched their videos and I'm like, I still don't get it.
Okay. You know, Jeff Birmingham, so he's thought of as the Silicon Slopes candidate. I'm sure that offends other candidates that are also
it
you
might
know, worthy
Jeff too, but
of representing him. I just thought I'd tell the audience, interesting, a lot of people struggle with, is it Birmingham or Birmingham?
Okay.
And if you go to his website, he does something really fun. He shows this beautiful big ham, and then he lights it on fire. And it's to remind you that it's burning ham.
Hmm.
Nice.
Pretty clever.
I was going to say, I have a similar, I mean, I tell people, you're aware of Al Gore.
Mm-hmm.
Gore. Just, you know somebody named Bonnie, slam them together.
Yeah.
Gore Bonnie.
That's
yeah.
great.
Ooh.
Hey, so
you're the love child of someone.
Talking about owning the media cycle for 24 hours or whatever. So Spencer Cox took a lot of heat in the past week. It came from the Eagle Forum debate where he made a comment about slavery and abortion. Who wants to go on that one first?
Well, I was defensive of the lieutenant governor on social media. Just, you know, he didn't make the comparison between the two. What he said was he believes that slavery is horrible and he believes that someday, you know, that abortion will be viewed the same way. And here's what I think. If I was to read between the lines, I think Spencer feels the same way I do. If you look at the background and conditions of why a woman would choose to have an abortion and you read about just the psychological and the sociological studies behind it, right? Be it poverty, be it limited choices, be it, you know, in lack of access to health care or lack of access to child care. You go down the list where I think, you know, and sociologically and psychologically, one of the elements is they feel trapped, right? And so in that scenario, if we could do something as society to eliminate those feelings that made someone feel like they needed an abortion, I think that'd be awesome. And if we got there as a society where no one felt like they needed to have an abortion, that would be phenomenal. And I think at that point in society, we'd look back and say, I can't believe we used to do that. And we do that all the time. And knowing the lieutenant governor, I know
that's
in my mind,
from.
He's looking 25 years in the head and seeing it that way. I like that way of thinking about it. But people took a lot of offense.
I think there's real danger in comparing people's experiences of pain.
Sure.
That is a very dangerous place to be, especially when both of those categories are not categories of experience that the lieutenant governor has ever stood in.
That's fair.
Whether that's a history of, you know, slavery or ever having to face the decision about their reproductive health. And when we're conflating those things and in general comparing people's pain, it's not good business. Yeah. And frankly, I think it's very alienating for people, regardless of some, you know, emotional or moral position you take on something. Yeah. And that's really important to me. I spend a lot of time thinking about politics through this lens and really am committed to a politics that is not about exploiting people's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was insensitive. And I am glad that he has said he's not going to make that comparison anymore.
Yeah.
And I think actually many of us do better when we stop making comparisons about experiences we don't have.
Sure.
From the political middle, I'm just going to thank both of you for making great points.
Yeah. And I'm going
to
say,
you know,
I actually
have a lot more to add, but
I actually just learned. I mean, I think that's a very smart, very wise way of saying it, Shireen, is that, you know, comparing people's pain. Because inevitably, one is going to feel like you're either understating their pain and overvaluing somebody else's. And honestly, I think I probably do that with my kids. So you probably made me a better dad today.
Shireen, you were quite articulate on that point. I got to hear you in the past week on KSL. I didn't tell you this. I don't know where I was, but I'm just doing things. And all of a sudden, I hear a familiar voice. I'm like, oh, that's Shireen. She's talking about the signatures, the citizen referendum, and Harmon's, Associated Foods. To give the voters a choice on this tax reform. Shireen, I've got something to say on that, but did you want to share a story or tell us about your experiences?
Because
you've probably been out there as much as anybody on this.
Definitely not. I have been out there. I have been working on this. I am, as I mentioned last week at the end of the show, I am interested when people get active and when they have reasons that I can really connect on. And in particular for me, it's the state sales tax on food tripling the state sales tax on food and thinking through some of the ways that we might do better on that issue are important to me. So that's really the driving factor for me to be a part of this. And when I am out there, of course, what I'm noticing is it has brought forward people from all sorts of different political persuasions, many Republicans. And the argument that I hear from Republicans is so different often. Usually the state sales tax on food is a part of it, gas as well. But
it's minor compared to some of their other stuff.
It's minor compared to some of their other stuff. And that's been a really interesting piece of my experience in talking to people and spending a couple of hours with an individual who said, oh, hey, you, I voted against you, lives in Bountiful. We spent some interesting time together. And the other thing I'll say is the more opportunities that people from very diverse political backgrounds have to spend actually speaking with each other and working on things where we have common ground, I think it's better for this state.
Yeah. Shireen, I applaud Harmon's, anyone who wants to engage more in the process and be a part of things. I do question whether a citizens' referendum on tax policy is the right way to go.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I would say there is that it requires everyone that signs those petitions and everyone that votes to invest the time to understand things like representative government presents to you. So there's an obligation that comes with it. If they meet the obligation, it's great. But I we're running out of time. But I've been pondering this in my mind. The sales tax has been around since 1933. Mm. We've had a food tax the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
We still have a food tax.
Yeah.
The first time ever that we will take the sales tax off of food is right now because the legislature effectively gives you more than what you pay back if you file a tax return.
If you file a tax return.
So I would say that what I would like to see Harmon's do is get people voluntary tax service to file their returns, because then we get all the benefits of this incredible policy that gives a tax cut, that cleans our air because we have higher gas taxes. You know, there's some really clever policy work in there.
Mm. But that makes, that would require someone to acknowledge that there was a lot of compromise that goes into that bill.
Yes.
To make things happen. So, and people don't love to compromise.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, and I'll say that, so I've written a piece that's in the Deseret News about this, and it was hard for me to write. I love Harmon's. I'm a big Harmon's customer, but I essentially say that tax policy is difficult to talk about at the checkout line.
Yeah. No, it really is. And it's tough in a retail standpoint for anything. So
we got to go to gripe, Stan.
Okay. My gripe is the referendum, but anyway, you know, as we look at tax policy, I do love that people are at least talking about it, right? So in that way, people are involved, people care, they're
maybe
talking.
Something good comes from
I'm
it.
I'm in. Yeah, maybe something good.
Do you think they'll get the signatures?
No, but really quickly, I will say, you know, so I'm proposing two constitutional amendments in the next session. One to do away with the earmark. And the other is to create a second earmark where all of the other government services are covered by all the other state revenue sources, which if everybody starts wanting to argue about their silos, be a big problem there.
Clever. Shireen, quick gripe.
Mine, is this a gripe? I don't know. I would just like people to keep in mind the new resource center model for individuals experiencing homelessness. I just came from the Men's Resource Center, have been to all three of the new resource centers. There's a great opportunity to volunteer there, to really be thinking about what it means to create community around individuals who often feel very isolated.
I'm going to say that's a wrap. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorpani and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.